This is not. I finished my master's last year, and then some friends and I were talking about what else could we do, and it was like, there hasn't been documentation of LGBT people in Western North Carolina.
Okay.
So that's where this came from.
Okay.
Okay, today is May 1st, 2010. My name is Kathy Staley, and I'm with Beth Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And could you...
Okay, my name is Beth Thompson, and I am 64 years old next month. I was born and raised in Eastern North Carolina in a small coastal town, Washington, North Carolina. I attended UNC Chapel Hill from 64 to 68. Lived a lifetime there in Washington until 1996 and moved to Western North Carolina and Clyde, which is everything that's not either Waynesville or Canton in Haywood County. So that's my little history of who I am. And you might, if you need a question, to discover other things.
What occupation?
Oh, okay. And I am, by the way, I am transsexual.
Mm-hmm.
And I started that in 1996. So therefore my occupation was, I owned and operated a very large sawmill down in Eastern North Carolina. And I actually attended Chapel Hill on an athletic scholarship.
What?
So, been very interesting, quite a polarity of existence, I guess. But I came up when I separated, and I had gotten dry. I had consumed alcohol alcoholically for 32 years, I guess, in an attempt to kind of try and hide from myself, or at least was useful in that regard. And I began recovery in 1993, and came to a place of finally being honest with myself that I either needed to be, or I needed to use the alcohol to hide from being. And so I decided that I didn't need to drink anymore. And so, and sharing that information with my spouse, obviously that was not an acceptable thing, which I totally understood. And after all, it took me 47 years to get to the point of being able to accept it in myself. So I can't expect anybody else to. So I left home and came to Western North Carolina. I had one son, and both my son and my ex have since passed away. My ex died in 2002, and my son in 2004.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, tragically with a heart attack, shoveling snow in Boston, out in his driveway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he hated cold weather and snow just like I do, and so I know that he was just going at it too quick. So, anyway, that's
so
me.
Your ex-wife wasn't
mm-hmm.
very accepting. How was
no.
the rest of your family?
You know, it's such an odd thing. And it would be one thing, I think, that had I just come out as gay, that would have possibly been easier. At least they would have a point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
But this was so off the wall. So I have a sister and my mother, and who is still living at 96, and they had a difficult time with it. It's not if, you know, people that tended to live through the Depression and the Second World War and of that generation tended to come out of it with a sense of propriety that you did not change. You know, you did not buck the system, so to speak. And to do anything to do that was quite embarrassing. And not at that point, I'm sure, because if I think about it in my own head, had my father had this going, you know, how in the world would I, and I can't get my mind around how I would feel about that. So I don't blame, there's no blame or anything else, but I had to get to a place that I was okay understanding that they were doing the best they could based on their own experiences up to that point. Now, over a period of time, we have become closer again. And that's a good thing. But, you know, a lot of what my recovery has taught me is that you can't change anybody else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've tried to change myself to be more accepting of what other people think and to be okay with that, you know. I need to stand up for who I am and be honest and live in a loving space, and that's the best I can do, you know.
How did you first hear about transgenderism and it start connecting within yourself?
I can vividly remember, and this is so odd to me, I can vividly remember as a child, and let's see, I think that would have been when I would be about 8 years old, because I think it was in 54, this Christine Jorgensen thing.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd heard about her.
And I actually saw that in the paper. And even as small as I was at 8 years old, I cut it out and said that there was something about it that totally intrigued me and that I was totally fascinated by, and that there was a sense of being, finally, there was this over here, this difference that also existed, that had been, there was no way to put a name on the feelings at all, because it wasn't something that was possible or anything. But at that point, it was. Now, that was a beginning story. However, that was impossible for me at that point. And so I had to find a way to live my life that was going to be a decent way of living, I guess, you know, what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for whatever reason that my parents made me aware early on that if I would do all of the real boy things that, so there must have been something there, because my mother has actually intimated that they did that, that things, that I would get their love that way, and that was the right way to do things. And so I went at that, and I was either cursed or blessed that athletics was something that I was good at and I could do, and that my physical size and abilities were there to make that happen. And so my sister was 5 years older, and she was, you know, studied all the time and was such a perfect daughter and doing things just the way you should do, and I was never asked to study. As long as I did those things. And so then my starting to use alcohol and party, just as guys did when they were young, I was never admonished for that. You know, it was like, you need to be more careful, you know, if I came home that way, but not, you shouldn't do that, you know. So that was kind of a way of living. And I think that by the time I finished school, because I lost an eye when I was a senior in high school, and so I kind of, in college, I had to kind of give up playing ball. And so at that point, drinking was the main function of life for me. Not going to class, not really interested in doing that. How in the world I graduated, I have no idea, but I did, just barely, you know, with the 2.00000, you know, out to infinity. But my life was about presenting this person, this persona, that was to the very far extreme of masculinity, in order that nobody ever questioned anything.
Did it feel like that was who you were, or did it feel like you were acting?
As I look back on it now, it feels like that it was acting. I'm sure as I lived through it, for instance, my mother asked me, she said, well, now, you didn't go through life not enjoying life, not having fun. I said, certainly not. I had great fun doing these things. But when you start drinking alcoholically at 15, most of it's a haze. And so I can't go back and really get specific about feelings. At all. I never approached the subject. I never had any feelings of being gay. That was not there. The gender thing was, but I didn't have to think about it. I could just pour another drink, you know, and that's how I dealt with it. Then I got sober and it wouldn't go away, you know. And to stay sober, you gotta get honest. And that, boy, that's a hard thing to look at.
In the 90s, when you were mm-hmm. becoming mm-hmm. sober, mm-hmm. were there any role models of transsexuals that you could relate to? Or?
No, of course, I who was it? The tennis player, whoever that was.
Renee Richards?
Yeah. I had seen that on TV, and when she was taking part in that, I didn't like the fact that she was always referred to as the transsexual, you know, mm-hmm. and so that was a kind of a downer, but at the same time, I just, you know, when she was, that was mainly in the 70s, I think, when she was doing that, late 70s maybe, and so I just didn't pay much attention to it. In the 90s, what I found when I got sober was a transgender support group in Asheville, North Carolina. And
what was its name?
Phoenix. Okay. And so I made a contact with people there. And that was why when I left home, I had no idea what I was going to do. I basically left penniless after living a life of, you know, being not that way, of being certainly upper middle class. But it gave me a little anchor up in Asheville. And like I said, when I left and I came up there, I had no idea where this was going to lead me. I just needed to be available to whatever, and begin to learn what it's all about, and what is this, and to what extent, you know, where do I fall on this continuum of stuff? And so it was a learning process when I came up. And at the same time, I had never in my life really been a seeker spiritually, and so it gave me an opportunity at that point also to begin to do some study with that. And what a great place to do that in Asheville. There's so many different philosophies available to study. And so that was, I went through actually my dark night of the soul, I think, at that point as I was doing some of those things and coming to a crunch thing, place, point, in which I came out the other side realizing who I was and what I needed to do. So, and then when I met my partner, Nan, that, you know, she helped facilitate so much of everything.
Did,
so.
She, did Did you meet her during the transition
yes.
period?
Yes, I did. And, you know, we are a lesbian couple, but when we met, now she met me, I was beginning the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's who she saw. And she wondered, when we met, how in the world she could be attracted to this person in very bad drag, you know? And yet we both were. We both were not looking. I could not, there was no way I could visualize or feel that anyone could ever be interested in me ever because of the internalized phobias I had about folks like me. And so I couldn't see that anybody else could. And she was very in a good place in her life, not needing anybody else. And her life was going along just the way she wanted, thank you very much. And, you know, she liked to be up at the cabin and stay and have a lot of solitude. And so, yeah. But it's been like we were soulmates and that we were supposed to be there. And it does feel like that I've known her forever, yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you backtrack a little and talk
okay.
a little bit about Phoenix, how it's structured, how many people attend?
Well, it's, and I have some difficulty with some of that now that I am where I am, but Phoenix is represents the huge umbrella of what transgender is. And so it's from one end of the spectrum to the other, including heterosexual cross-dressers through drag queen people to transgender people who off and on present one gender or the other. And then on the line into, there are some who are present as female or male who are never going to do anything about it, but that's how they live their life. And then there are a few transsexuals who have taken part in that. Early on, I had found out that most transsexuals, once they have surgery, once they have changed it, they're living their lives, that's what they are, don't take part in the transgender community. And I couldn't see that at first, but now that's the way I am. And it's kind of like I am now able to be who I am, and I don't necessarily relate to the other, and don't want to be perceived as being. I mean, I know that sounds terrible, but you know, I've passed that. I don't need that. It was very useful and very good for me to have gone through there, and it was a vehicle I was able to use to find direction. But I don't know exactly how I feel about someone who is just dressing up or something like that using the ladies' room. I certainly don't think that that's a political thing that needs to be fought for. So I don't get involved in it now because those things are not something that I really think about or feel like I need to be involved with.
How long were you involved? Was it?
I still will try to go to one of their meetings a year just to. I feel like I need to, for whatever reason, I need to say, okay, I honor the fact that this is here. I need to get that. And what's useful to me. I don't look at my life and who I am. It's kind of I will readily admit that I am a transsexual. I do not look at myself as transgender, if that makes any sense at all. However, if this had not been there, then I would still have been going around in circles, I'm sure, or probably. Or, you know, I mean, I guess I would have found someplace else somewhere. But, because, especially with the computers now, it's everywhere, you know.
Is that how you found Asheville?
No, someone else that I had talked to, I had called up one of these, this is back in the early 90s, one of these 800 number things. And I called and I talked to somebody, and of course, the lines were these sex lines, I think, but I wasn't interested in talking about that. I said, I want to, have you got some information? And one of these people put me in touch with another person who was also transsexual. And they had told me about a magazine that they got. And I said, well, I don't want to go buy that magazine. Can you mail me one of yours? And so she did. And then from that, it had in the back, it had a list of resources. And Phoenix was listed there. And it was in North Carolina. And, you know, I didn't want to go north. And so that seemed a good choice for me. Right. So that's how I found that. And I called the head of Phoenix there. And we corresponded, and I went to Asheville several times before I actually left in order to visit. And yeah. So.
How would you describe Asheville's attitude and environment regarding LGBT people?
Asheville is not where I live. I live
right.
in Hayward County, a totally different situation. Mm-hmm. Asheville is very open. I can't imagine a place that's any more accepting of. It does seem to me that anywhere you go there, in within Asheville, in restaurants and so forth, to Grove Park, into Biltmore, anywhere, and it's a homogenous place, and there is no signs to me. That I have ever seen in Asheville, that anybody would even think about there being a difference. You know, that there's anything wrong with LGBT people being part and parcel of what society is in Asheville. You know, just what it is.
Did you live in Asheville when you first came?
For a very short period of time, yeah. Okay. In fact. When I began doing my spiritual work, I was living in Asheville. I was subleasing an apartment from the person who headed up the Phoenix Group. I didn't have any money or anything, so I slept on the floor and I just sat in there and really did deep meditation and reading. That was all I did for 4 or 5 months. But I was in Asheville where it was okay to be, and it was also okay for me to begin because my first job was there. I traveled from Hayward County back over to Asheville to my job as I began to follow the Harry Benjamin standards of care, you know, where you live for a year before you can have surgery and that sort of thing. And that was a nervy thing to begin, you know, but I didn't, I got looks and so forth. I think, though, that as I've gone along and after surgery and everything else and with the hormonal changes, I don't get that so much now. But early on, it was there.
Could you talk about your job in Asheville when
mm-hmm.
you were beginning the transition?
I got a job with a book company. And I had been working part-time in a gay bookstore. And a person came in there who worked for this book company and said they were looking for someone to, you know, some more help. And so I told them that I was interested in beginning transition. And so they said, well, I think that would be okay with this. So anyway, I went there and interviewed and in the interview as male told them that this is what I needed to do and it was okay. And so I was very fortunate, very lucky, because it's really hard for me to say that Asheville is a certain way as far as work is concerned, because I was lucky that it just hit that this worked out perfectly. I can picture in my mind how that might have gone and been very different, going from place to place to place, trying to because it's one thing to go to a place, and if you're gay, you don't have to answer that question. But if you're going to do transition, you have to. And at that point, my identification and everything I've got is male. And so I couldn't go in there and try to hide something that I'm not up front with. And I think it's part of the status of care to confront you. You know, this is who I am. And for the individual to have enough guts and courage to see if they can step over that threshold. But I was very fortunate. In so many things, I had been just so fortunate to be in the right place at the right time for things to unfold. Mm-hmm. And to unfold in a way that's not been troublesome at all. I haven't experienced discrimination. I have had a few times with looks and things like that, but you know, that some of that is because I'm 6'2", you know. So, if someone were to ask me, you know, about discrimination, I haven't been discriminated against. Then I worked for, I left there and worked for a bookstore for about a year and decided I didn't like what I was doing there and started work with a large company that is a retail concern. I'm not going to say the name just because they might not need me representing them, but got into management and I managed one of their stores. And so that was kind of cool that here I was able to, as myself, you know, get to a certain place with a career, if you will, if you want to call it that, because of my age, I wasn't interested in doing but so much for so long anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty well retired now. So, but that was good, and I had expected a certain amount of problems as I started, and they really have not. You know, it's kind of like one of our little sayings in recovery, you know, worrying about the wreckage of the future, and it doesn't happen. Because it should, in my mind, with my own phobia, I should have been discriminated against. I should have experienced some abuse, probably. You know, this is where my mind went with it. Not that I would have ever, as a person, abused someone else, but I would have, and I might have stepped in if I had seen something like that happen, or at least said, you know, just leave the person alone, they're crazy, you know. But certainly I would have judged that person. And I haven't even felt that I have experienced a lot of judgment. I'm sure there's some, you know, but I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And if I don't see it, then it's not hurting me. But and I don't know how long it'll be before that kind of thing won't be thought of. But I think that it's one thing for gay people to assimilate as we go through history, to a point that it's not a thought. It's just that, who do you date? Well, I date so-and-so. And it makes the thought of that being a gender thing not even being of use. I don't know that someone changing their gender would always be kind of a dramatic thing, I think. unless there was a way that they could find out early enough to have had that done early on. What a great thing that would have been. However, had that happened to me early on, I don't know what the impetus would have been for me to get to where I am now spiritually. And so I wouldn't be willing to give that up for the other. So it just, I guess with this lifetime it is what it is.
Could you talk a little bit about your spiritual journey?
Without getting, obviously as I began, I had in my life always been a good Methodist. In my community and I still call that home, Washington, North Carolina, even though I don't go back there and I'm not welcome back there. I was on the board of trustees and that sort of thing with the church. My father always was. When I began recovering, and I began to read, and we've got a little book called 24-Hour Book, and each day has a little different thought for you to grasp it. And this was as my ex and I were sitting down, and we were reading these things together. And she was willing to, you know, to get involved in that too as I began my recovery. And we kind of hit on things. She was very, very conservative in her own ideas about what Christianity represents. And so it began, we began actually to, for me anyway, I began to move away from her. I need to backtrack just a little bit from that. We, in college, had to get married. She got pregnant. We'd only dated, you know, about five times. And at that point, there wasn't any question, okay, this is what you got to do. Mm-hmm. And so I had to do it. So love is kind of something that I'm not sure of throughout that 28 years we were together. But she was willing to sit down and for us to do these readings. And it got to be to where she felt that if you were not Christian, if you did not believe and Jesus was not your savior, if you will, then you go straight to hell. That homosexuals go straight to hell. That Buddhists go straight to hell. That all of these people who are going straight to hell, you know, and all my mind could think was, that doesn't make sense to me. I can't go there. If you are living in a state of love, then you can't go to hell, because that's what it's supposed to be about. And so I began to move away from her at that point. And as I got up here, I did some study in Native American thought, in Buddhist thought, in Theosophy, which is Blavatsky. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but this was a 19th century woman who went all around the world studying all Eastern religions and everything else and came up with this philosophy that she had that I felt was pretty much right on as